One of America's best-selling authors of all time was Horatio Alger Jr. of the 19th century. He wrote many novels for young people with the theme of rags to riches. Alger published some 100 books before his death in 1899 and sold perhaps as many as 300 million copies. But today, Horatio Alger is virtually unknown, or if he is known, he is often put down as essentially writing the same book over and over and over, just in different settings. Now, Rick Newcomb, who is my brother, by way of full disclosure, he is the founder of Creator Syndicate, and recently he's begun a line of publishing books called Sumner Books, including some of the classic novels by Horatio Alger, and it's Rick's desire that a whole new generation can come to see the brilliance and the beauty of what Horatio Alger put in books. And in fact, Rick's company has even put together some audio books on this. Rick, welcome to the program. It's nice to interview my own brother.
Well, thank you, Jerry. I'm excited to be here.
So why is Horatio Alger important to you, and why should he be important to this new generation?
Horatio Alger helped form the American character. Publishers Weekly magazine once wrote that Horatio Alger had more to do with the formation of the American character than anyone in history, with the possible exception of Benjamin Franklin. Alger created, he wrote novels, and he created characters who had character traits, such as the heroes were honest, hardworking, generous. They went the extra mile. They bent over backwards to help their fellow men and women. They were just, you know, what we think of as all good things.
Mm-hmm.
And the villains, very often, you know, people think of Horatio Alger as rags to riches, a phrase he never used. But the idea that, you know, oh, it's just a way to get rich. Well, no, that's very often the villains were the rich people. They were the ones of inherited wealth or stolen wealth, or the ones who tried to get rich through gambling or luck. But the character traits of the villains were things like laziness, envy, jealousy. And so he wrote these stories. Alger himself, he went to Harvard. He was the son of a minister in
mm-hmm.
Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Harvard and did very well there, and then went to Harvard Divinity School and decided to follow in his father's footsteps and become a minister. And he had his own church for a few years. But he really wanted to write. You know, he'd go home at night and sit in his room and write. He just loved to write. So finally, at some point, after a few years, he moved to New York City. And this was right after the Civil War. So he started writing his novels around 1865. And he didn't start writing them as novels. He wrote them as short stories. It was very much like Conan Doyle with Sherlock Holmes, where Doyle would write a story for the Strand magazine. And then he'd write another story, and that would come out in the next issue, and then mm-hmm. another story. And then
I think Charles Dickens did it that way, too, with a lot of his stuff.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it may have been common in the 1800s. So Alger wrote for magazines like Student and Schoolmate or something like the school. Yes, Student and Schoolmate. And he created a character that people called. He was known on the street as Ragged Dick because he wore rags, and his name was Richard, and he was a shoeshine boy. This is the very first story he ever wrote, and it was an instant hit. Boys and girls ages 7 to 17 all over the country wanted more. They wanted to read another one, read what happened next. So then he wrote, you know, the second one for the magazine, and then the third one, and then eventually it became a book called Ragged Dick, and then he followed that up with volume two, with the same characters called Fame and Fortune. Then he followed that up with book three. It was almost like a trilogy called Mark the Match Boy, again with the same characters. And it's just absolutely fascinating how it just took off. I mean, he sold millions at first, and then tens of millions, and as you say, hundreds of millions. And if you Google, like I just did, best-selling American authors of all time, number five is Horatio Alger.
Wow.
And yet, when I interview young people today, they've never heard of him. They don't even know what he stands for. And I think that's very interesting because I think it relates to our society and our culture. that where we, you know, our young people are exposed. They're, you know, we, so many people in Hollywood try to make them grow up. You know, when they're five, they dress them up for beauty pageants or to look like hookers.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
yeah,
it's,
I know.
It's good.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. And it's funny too, because what people don't realize is there is a market for the good and the wholesome. I mean, 20 years ago, for example, Bill Bennett made publishing history when he put together that massive book called The Book of Virtues. And I interviewed him, by the way, at the time. And I remember he said there, he used this phrase, there's nothing mean, nasty, or salacious in the book. And yet it became a bestseller. And, hopefully maybe people can rediscover Horatio Alger Jr. through your efforts.
Yes. Now, here's the thing. When I had this idea, and this goes back 5 or 6 years ago, there were virtually no Horatio Alger books available as e-books or audiobooks. We spent a lot of time. You see, Creator Syndicate is the third largest newspaper and digital syndication company in the world.
And you started
Yes, in 1987. Mm-hmm. We syndicate comic strips and columns that everybody's familiar with. And we've had many household names. Some of the leading conservatives, some of the leading liberals. Just watching in this presidential campaign, we have been syndicating a column before he started running for president by Dr. Ben Carson. Hmm. And then we published his columns as a book called What I Believe by Ben Carson, and I actually wrote the introduction to that.
Oh.
Back in the mid-90s, we syndicated Hillary Clinton when she was first lady, and she wanted to be like Eleanor Roosevelt, who wrote the... Eleanor Roosevelt was the only other first lady who ever wrote a syndicated column for newspapers called My Day. And so Hillary wanted to write one, and she did, and she did it with us. So we have this experience working with big-name writers and artists for more than 30 or 30 years.
Johnny Hart, Ann Landers, Thomas Sowell.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Pat Buchanan.
Bill O'Reilly. Yeah, no, it goes on and on.
It's good.
It's like our dad used to say. Every time Rick signs somebody, they get a TV show. So that was a funny comment, a nice compliment. This goes back again into the 90s. He was telling me that.
Sure.
All right. So now, you know, newspapers with the younger generation, they're not reading very much in print and newspapers. So we're looking for ways to grow the company and ways to change. And I don't know how or why I thought of Sherlock Holmes. I mean, Sherlock Holmes. I did think of Sherlock Holmes, but I thought, everybody's done that a million times. And I'm a big fan of Conan Doyle, but his Sherlock Holmes characters.
Sure.
But it was, you know, this idea of Horatio Alger. So then I started reading some of the books, and I was shocked at how good they are. They're just fun. They have lively plots. I want to know what happens next. This idea that they're all the same is just nonsense.
Yeah,
it's just nonsense.
Now this is
a way for people to disparage them.
Sure, and this is a Christian station. And here's the thing: these books wouldn't be Christian per se, but they reflect Judeo-Christian values. This is the same point I was making earlier about Bill Bennett. And in fact,
he was a minister.
Yeah, and
a Christian minister.
I want to quote from you from something you wrote. You published one of these books. It's called The Irish Boy. And
only an Irish boy. Only an Irish boy.
Yes, only an Irish boy. And you were talking about W. Clement Stone, who was a very successful man. He wrote the book, The Success System That Never Fails. And he always said something like, you know, when you make money, you give one-third to God, one-third to... you know, for saving, and then one-third, you know, for spending. Whatever it was. But anyway, here's what he said, that when he was 12 years old, I guess he was on a summer holiday, and he discovered in the attic a whole treasure trove of 50 of these Horatio Alger novels. Okay, here I'm going to actually quote from him, and this is from you, from your book in the very back as a kind of an epilogue, if you will. But I'll never forget the day. This is Clement Stone talking. I'll never forget the day I went upstairs to the attic, for there I met Horatio Alger. At least 50 of his books, dusty and weather-worn, were piled in the corner. I took one down to the hammock in the front yard and started to read. Now, this is you talking. Stone said he was so enthralled he couldn't stop. Stone, quote, I read through all of them that summer. And then you go on to say, he said the principles in each book was that, quote, the hero became a success because he was a man of character, the villain a failure because he deceived and embezzled. How many Alger books were sold? No one knows. Estimates range from 100 million to 300 million. That's you talking afterwards. But I think that's an important point, especially, you know, in a day when we're basically told character doesn't matter. Character does matter.
Oh, without a doubt. And like in the opening scene in that book, Only an Irish Boy, there's a bully. And, you know, bullying is a common problem today. And how the Irish kid, you know, handles it. And it's just beautiful. It's, you know, it was written 150 years ago, yet it could have been written last week. And it's what's such a wonderful thing about these books is it transports you back. You get a vivid picture of what America was like between 1865 and 1900.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Alger died in 1899, but his books were published after, you know, posthumously, yeah. So into the 1900s.
Good.
So that 35-year period, what Mark Twain called the Gilded Age, is just absolutely fascinating. Now, here's the thing. We did this especially for homeschooling parents.
Yeah.
We hired teachers to write teacher's guide questions and answers.
Good.
For all of the books. And these are available as paper books, as ebooks, and as audiobooks. But you need to go to sumnerbooks.com, sumnerbooks.com, to find this. And we're just now starting to introduce them. And I really, Jerry, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this opportunity.
Oh, sure.
To talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, there are various Horatio Alger societies. Like, they give out the Horatio Alger Award once a year. I know Dr. Carson received it. I think maybe Oprah Winfrey. I know one of Warren Buffett's top executives was very involved with it. And we've contacted them, and they're interested. But I get the feeling that they haven't even read the books.
Yeah,
it's all just this concept. I've had people say to me, oh, I didn't know Horatio Alger was a person. I thought it was an expression. Remember Mike Naser, Jerry, when we were at Doug's in Phoenix, and I was telling him about the Horatio Alger. And he said, you know, I've always heard that name, Horatio Alger, but I just thought it was a term. I didn't know it was an actual human being's first name.
One of the things you've done is you've created audiobooks of some of these. So you have Only an Irish Boy. We have right here a sample, 1 minute and 6 seconds, of the very opening of the your ebook. And again, it's Horatio Alger Jr., Only an Irish Boy.
It's an ebook, an audiobook, and a paper book.
Saddle my horse and bring him around to the door. The speaker was a boy of 15. Handsomely dressed and, to judge from his air and tone, a person of considerable consequence, in his own opinion at least. The person addressed was employed in the stable of his father, Colonel Anthony Preston, and so inferior in social condition that Master Godfrey always addressed him in imperious tones. John looked up and answered respectfully, "Master Godfrey, your horse is sick of a disease, and your father left orders that it wasn't to go out on no account." "It's my horse," said Godfrey. "I intend to take him out." "Maybe it's yours, but your father paid for it." "None of your impudence, John," answered Godfrey angrily. "Am I master, or are you? I should like to know."
"Neither, I'm thinking," said John with a twinkle in his eye. "It's your father who's the master."
Rick, tell us about the actor.
The actor's name is Ben Gilman, and he is fantastic. Now, when I first interviewed Ben, I said, "Do you know Horatio Alger?" He said, "Well, I know the name, and I know he wrote some stories, but I'll have to do some research and go read." So he told a story. He went to the Hollywood Library and looked for Horatio Alger books. The number 5 selling author in American history, and they said, "Oh, we don't have any." You would have to go downtown L.A. to the historical section to find those. That shows you how far this society has gone in the wrong direction from the creation of what we know as the American character.
Mm-hmm.
Then a second story involving Ben Gilman. He played his acting, his versatile acting is just, it comes through like one 8-year-old boy who listened to this. He happens to be my nephew and your nephew. This is Sean Chagrou, our sister's son. He was 8 years old, and he listened to it. The whole family listened to it on a car. And Margot, her sister, said, the kids just loved it. They just absolutely loved it. But then Sean, the 8-year-old, said he wanted to listen to it a second time, just himself. So he put in earbuds and listened to the whole thing a second time. Now, he said, there's no way you could convince me that that's only one person reading it. I thought there were at least 10 people reading the book.
That's a testimony to how...
That shows what a great job...
What a great job the actor did, but also what a great job Horatio Alger did in writing the story that he would be listening to it even a second time. Stories have power. I mean, Jesus Christ, of course, he's the Savior, and he did a lot more than just tell stories, but that was his main way of teaching, was teaching parables, or it was one of the main ways. And, you know, we still tell those stories to this very day. Well, Rick, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. SumnerBooks.com for more information. And how about a closing thought for 20 seconds about Horatio Alger and what you're trying to do?
You know, one of the things that I found interesting was that Groucho Marx, who I always thought was very funny, said that Horatio Alger literally changed his life. And then by the end of his life, he looked back on it and he said, that was the story of my life, the Horatio Alger character. Ernest Hemingway, his sister, said that when he was like 12, 13 years old, he could not get enough of Horatio Alger. Walter Brennan, the famous actor, same thing. So there are many, many people whose lives were influenced. And I think many of the people today who are between 7 and 17, boys and girls, who read these stories could, I'm speaking now to the parents, especially if you're homeschooling, these could have a tremendous influence on your children for a lifetime, like it did on those three examples, Groucho Marx, Ernest Hemingway, and Walter Brennan.
In a positive direction. All right, Rick,
absolutely.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks so much for being with us. SumnerBooks.com.
Thank you very much, Jerry.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.